Halfway home on a Friday, mercifully. Ben and Woods, 97.3, The Fan. Great to be here with you. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Rindel, the executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. Obviously spent a good portion of the morning talking about the five-game losing streak from our beloved San Diego Padres. And, you know, listen, I mean, you don't want this thing to get any worse. I'll tell you that. You do not want it to get any worse. Just a battle for the mid right now in the NL West. But yeah, I mean, Giants win tonight. We lose tonight. They will be in fourth place. And, sure, I get it. It's June 7th or whatever. But yeah, it's just not a hole you want to keep digging. If you're Mike Shildt and the San Diego Padres, will be joined by the skipper in an hour. Looking forward to talking to him. It's always a different tenor, I think, after a game than it is the next morning. And, you know, we're talking about, remember we played the clip from Pete Fairbanks, the 16 minutes of sulk. I've been a lot more sulkier after five straight losses than just 16 minutes and having the ability to flush it. I have that sense of dread when I watch the team now, which I hate having that. I didn't have that a few weeks ago. I've got it now. Like, what can go wrong? And it probably will.
The Padres are now one of 11 teams in the National League out of 15 with a losing record.
Yeah.
There's only four teams
above 500
that don't have a losing record. They
Crazy.
Are the Phillies, the Brewers, the Dodgers, and the Braves.
Yeah.
They're all at least, I think, 10 games above 500. After that, you get the Cubs at 31-32, the Padres at 32-34, the D-backs at 30-33, the Giants at 30-33, the Reds at 30-33, the Cardinals at 29-32, and the Pirates at 29-33. So from the Cubs, the number 5 team, to the Pirates, the number 11 team. That's a 1.5 game difference.
Yep. Crazy.
All the way through.
Crazy.
It's the National League of Mediocrity.
Yeah.
And joining us right now here on Ben and Woods, it's a Friday. It's a Cespedes Family Barbecue Friday presented by Grand Ole Barbecue. And there he is, our friend Jordan Schusterman from Cespedes Family Barbecue. Yahoo Sports is with us. This is as mid as we've seen a league in quite some time. Jordan, I assume you just heard my rundown of the very, very unimpressive standings.
We just recorded our pod this morning, and on Friday we do the good, the bad, and the ugla in honor of Dan Ugla. My bad this week was the National League. It was, I mean, that the Padres could go on this five game losing streak and still be in postseason position, that the Nationals, who are already not good, could go on a four game losing streak and be three games out of a postseason spot.
Wow.
Is, I mean, we had a version of this last year, but it wasn't this bad. And I am just every week I've been tasked with doing the power rankings for Yahoo Sports this season. And I haven't done it every week, but it's going to pick up in regularity coming up. And man, you know, you go through the first 10 or 11 teams and it's like, all right. And then it's like every team you rank feels way too high or way too low. You know, but for the most part, it seems way too high. I'm like, I still ended up having of course, I put the Padres still at like 13 before they get swept by the Angels. But if I had to do it again today, I don't know how much I'd drop them. I mean, man, like these other teams are so underwhelming too.
It is just, like Ben said, it's the battle of the mid. But you do have to, when you look at those teams that Ben just listed, you know, some teams are going to get guys back. Some teams are going to get, you know, guys are going to come back healthy. Guys are going to figure stuff out. They're going to make the adjustment, whatever, start hitting. You've seen Fernando Tatis on this insane streak. I mean, you know, he starts going well. Some of the other guys that had been performing well, they start to go down a little bit. That's the nature of the game. We're all fairly used to that. But when you look at some of those middling teams right now, is there one, maybe two, that jumps out to you that says, these guys will get it figured out?
I mean, the way I'm kind of looking, I think everything you said is totally fair. But this is, again, to tie it back to the Padres, I also think about it as who is not going to sit on their hands and just hope that it gets better?
That's true.
You know, and who has the pieces to go make a difference, right? And I think that the Arise trade being so early was a sign that not that that's exactly news that AJ Preller is going to try and make something happen. But of that middle tier, you know, I've been around the Reds, of course, a lot the past few years. And, you know, I think about what am I looking forward to? What am I seeing? Oh, this guy could come back. This could improve. And the Reds are a tough one. They're on this five-game winning streak. You know, three of those wins are in Colorado. I don't know if they have the pitching or offensive upside depth to kind of get back into that mix. I still feel like the Cubs are the most balanced of this group. And I think that their biggest weakness, as far as I'm concerned, which I think is the bullpen, is probably the easiest to address at the deadline. And then Arizona and San Francisco, man. Oh my gosh. I have no idea. But what's been going on with Jordan Montgomery is both disappointing and not totally shocking when you consider spring training apparently is pretty important for some pitchers. But that's another team where it's like there's a lot of underperformance and a lot of injuries on the mound. So I've been the one that's all that to say, I still believe in the Cardinals. I was the only person to pick the Cardinals in the NL Central. That was looking bad again for a month. They've started to turn it around. They have enough pieces where when they get healthy, especially on offense, I like to think the upside with that group is still pretty substantial. I think what Nolan Gorman has done recently has been really impressive. But guys, none of these teams are very good.
Yeah, I mean, this is the weird thing about the Padres, though, Jordan. You mentioned the Cubs and the Reds as two teams. Yeah, we've seen them four times. Padres won every single series against the Cubs and the Reds. So clearly, the Padres are better than those teams. Except they're clearly also not better than those teams. The Padres, and sometimes I feel like we're too close to it, but they're the team that it's hardest to make the sense out of. Last year, this year again. It's so hard to make sense out of the San Diego Padres. Winning record against winning teams, a losing record against losing teams.
Are we like the Blue Jays of the West?
I made that comp earlier this season, actually. Now, the Blue Jays are also having a very tough season. I know they've bounced back the last couple of nights. They don't have the cushion, right? They're not able to say, our league stinks. Or at least they're not able to say our division is mid, right? In the same way, it's they're in last, right? They're in last place, right? In the American League East, and they're still in it. They're still only three games out of a postseason spot as well. There's less of a cushion there, and they're also at a minus 43 run differential. But I think again, when you look at the names and you don't understand how it's computing to more wins, I agree with that, guys. 13-20 at home. What is this? Is a new? I don't remember this being a particular issue last year.
Nope.
Maybe it was, and I forgot.
No, they were okay at home. Not great, but not like
that
this.
That's the thing where I'm looking at it. I mean, that it has to be. I'm just looking at this quickly. Yeah, I mean, it's a bottom five home record in baseball. So that's truly mystifying. That's the one that I'm really struggling to kind of wrap my mind around.
Talking to our pal Jordan Schusterman from Cespedes Family Barbecue. So you guys, we had this conversation about a year ago about that college Misericordia,
yes.
Right? And we had this convo. The Cougars in 20, let's see, they get hit about three times per game, hit by pitches.
Yep.
And they teach their players to get dotted. They literally just teach them, like stand in there and wear it. They just won another championship, Jordan. I find this organization and team fascinating. Not that I would necessarily want to be like on the team because it wouldn't feel good all the time, but it's really wild this college baseball strategy that they have.
Yeah, so minor fact check there. They were in the World Series last year.
They're in it.
This is their first championship.
Oh, they won.
So they returned, and this is their first championship program history. But this has been, since I've been following D3 baseball closely for the last 10 years, one of the most successful programs. And so while it's easy to look at it and be like, this is a circus. This is ridiculous. They just stand on the plate, they get hit, and that's how they get to the World Series. I mean, listen, anyone that knows anything about it, it's not that simple, but it is also indicative of the kind of program that this is. And every cliche you could possibly think of regarding the gritty and grinder guys that are getting the most out of not the big, they don't look like the guys coming off the bus where you're like, watch out, here comes Misericordia. They are that through and through, and they have now done this for almost 10 years. Head coach Pete Egbert has been an unbelievable, force behind this. But the hit-by-pitchers are, again, with 147 this year.
Wow.
Garrett McIlhenny, who's kind of the face of their team, with another 30 this year, who I believe finished his five-year career at Misericordia with well over 100 hit-by-pitches. Their 5'5" center fielder leadoff guy. It's an amazing story. It is a hilarious, 92 for his career, 92 plonkings for his 5-year college career. But man, it's a really cool story. And as someone who cares about D3 sports, to see that team actually finally win it all instead of the team that they beat, for example, like Wisconsin Whitewater, who you look at their team and you're like, that looks like a D1 team.
Yeah.
Right? Holy cow. It's a little bit of a different vibe. But I was really excited to see the Cougars get it done this week.
Jordan, how much are we going to get shoved down our throat this weekend? Dodgers, Yankees.
Oh, yeah.
In the Bronx. I mean, Rob Manfred is probably praying that'll be the World Series matchup. Shohei Ohtani.
Sure is.
Juan Soto. Yeah, I mean, the Yankees have been great, but Soto now has some injury concerns. And obviously the Dodgers have not been quite as good as they thought, even though Ohtani's been fantastic. This is what baseball secretly would really want, though, I'm assuming.
Is it secret?
I don't know.
Listen, Dodgers, and you know, in this case, the Yankees have been the best team in baseball, right? So it's like, it's hard to even some, there are some years where you have these, the big market matchups where you really roll your eyes because they're not actually one of the best. In this case, it's like, well, yeah. I mean, but to your point, I was in Pittsburgh this week. I was there for Skeens and Ohtani. That was amazing. So, so, so cool. But I know they won. They put up a bunch of runs last night, but yeah, the Dodgers are very flawed. And I still think they're going to win the division fairly comfortably, because I think their pitching is still excellent, and I think that the infrastructure and obviously the top of the lineup is still good enough to win, you know, easily 90 plus games.
And the other four teams in the division aren't that good.
Correct.
So there you go.
Correct. Correct. Absolutely. So they're not exactly being. I was talking to Steven Nelson, another broadcaster, said I believe that they're like roughly 500 over the last few weeks, and they've gained in the division.
They have. It's like the most embarrassing thing. They're 13-12 in their last 25, and they've picked up like three games or something. It's just more.
So exactly. So no one really wants to push them. But as for this weekend, hopefully Juan Soto is healthy. I'm a little worried about the news we're going to get about that later today. But yeah, they've been everything you can hope. And while it's easy to roll your eyes, I know Jake will be definitely at a couple of those games. So he'll be providing the coverage that you guys will be rolling your eyes at. But I mean, come on, I'm excited to watch it too. It will be cool to see.
They're also going to give us a lot of the London series is this weekend as well, correct? It's a Mets and Phillies London, which, is this, the NFL is doing it, so we better follow suit and do something the same, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen a couple versions of this. You guys shouldn't be surprised to hear that I'm always going to be in favor of baseball in different places.
Sure.
Not just for the growth of the game, but because usually weird stuff happens.
In the
Mexico City series. But we talked about the show this morning. I think that Sunday game could get a little sloppy with the guys on the mound. So I'm excited to see, hopefully put up some runs. We got some weird dimensions over there. In the stadium they're playing in.
Which stadium are they playing in?
A few years ago. Sorry, say again.
What stadium are they playing in?
So they're playing where West Ham plays in London Stadium. So it's the same stadium where we had the Yankees Red Sox put up like 30 plus combined runs. However, if you recall, that was in a juiced ball plus no pitch clock list we're going to play for 5 hours. So at the very least, if we're going to squeeze in a bunch of runs, hopefully it'll take, you know, less than 5 hours.
I missed the juiced balls, something fierce, as Jake Cronenworth hit one last night that was compared to another home run with the exact same bat, you know, speed, the exact
launch angle,
and that one went out, and Cronies didn't, and Toddy missed one in the ninth. I miss them. I know it sucks for pitchers, but I really miss juiced balls. We are getting demolished home run wise at our home ballpark.
Yeah, and there was a one of the funniest moments of the season earlier this week in Pittsburgh. Teoscar Hernandez launches a ball off Aroldis Chapman. I don't know if you guys saw
that. No, we saw it. The glove throw?
Chapman turns around and spikes his glove. Now, this is, I think, partially indicative of Chapman being a little bit of a loose cannon on the mound, to say the least. So, but again, it was one of those things, and Dave, I think Shelton or Dave Roberts said afterwards, which is that pitchers know when they give up home runs, you know, like,
oh, yeah,
they can tell.
They know.
Like they can feel it immediately. And so the fact that he thought it was a homer. Now, that one was a little bit different because of the part of the park that it was hit to. But there were a couple this week in Pittsburgh. That's another one where the gaps are not particularly friendly to deep fly balls. But yeah, in San Diego, I can imagine you've had a few. And I think the evidence is pretty compelling. Hitting is hard enough now. And if balls are not traveling the way that they have been, well, forget 2017 and 2019. I mean, that was ridiculous. But even 2 years ago, right? Or even last year, or even, you know, it felt like we found a little bit more of a balance in terms of that stuff. And this year, listen, the numbers are the numbers. The balls are just not carrying quite as much.
Jordan, always a pleasure to chat with you. Have a good week, and we will talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
You know, you see, Padres are going to go off this weekend, and you'll be right back on.
I sure hope so. We have not had
one. Or should we measure ourselves? If they have a good week, should we go, let's not get too excited. Let's stay measured and calm about this team.
Doesn't sound like you guys.
Doesn't it sound like us at all? You know us so well, Jordan.
Or our fan base. I get it.
You know us so well. Thanks, Jordan.
Appreciate you guys.
Jordan Schusterman, Cespedes Family Barbecue, and that is presented each week by our friends at Grand Ole Barbecue, North Park, Flint Springs, at the ballpark. Try their brisket.
Might get some tonight, actually. I'll be at the yard. Get a little.
Oh, I was going tomorrow, and I was thinking the other day. Yeah. Grand Ole sounds real good.
I'm taking the fam tonight down to the game.
Yeah, you've got the fam in town out of town.
And you know, my nephews are just they're huge Padres fans as well. They watch as many Padres games as they can. They've got all the City Connect. They all want to buy some merch. And hopefully we can deliver a win for my mom, my dad, and my nephews, my brother, my sister-in-law. Should be a fun night at the ballpark.
I was just looking at those the home run stats because all the balls that just seem to not being going over the fence for the Padres but do go over the fence for the other team. It's a huge difference this season for the San Diego Padres, especially at Petco Park. Talk about that coming up this hour on 97.3 The Fan is brought to you by Prize Picks. Join the biggest moments in sports with Prize Picks. Pick your players, pick your stats, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for details, and we'll be back after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
Oh, you guys are creeps.
Creeps.
Ooh.
What? Would you guess that we were just talking about based on Woods' reaction?
Oh, Paulie and Ben just creep me out to no end. I think you guys are weird, creepy.
Weird proclivities.
Oh, your deviance.
Bedroom behaviors. Oh. No. Paul and I like the little cupped pepperonis on the pizza. And Woods thinks that is creepy.
It's the only way to go.
just filled with grease. All of them. Just like little cups of grease.
So when it you makes eat it those nice things. And crispy.
As opposed to other pizza that doesn't have a ton of grease.
No. Get all but crispy. You know what it's not? It's not little ladles full There's of grease. Nothing. It's grease if, on top. It's a glistening scene. You get one of those, fresh out of the oven, and there's your pizza with little tiny shot glasses of pepperoni.
Round Table, and by the way, has really good, they're double pepperonis. They have both kinds on it, which is really good. Which reminds me, you can tune in every Thursday at 10 a.m. for 97.3 The Fan's commercial-free Padres Roundtable featuring Ben Woods, Annie and Elston, and Gwen and Chris, if Gwen shows up, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. For takeout or delivery, go to roundtablepizza.com. Roundtable, the last honest pizza. I am determined to create a feud between myself and Tony Gwynn Jr.
But why? He's like the nicest guy ever.
Because I get the side eye for every comment I make during the roundtable.
And he will beat.
Maybe he was afraid of facing me after a four-game losing streak yesterday.
I'm sure.
Don't know. He was on the game, so he got back in time, obviously.
Oh, Tony, I don't want to be associated with him. And if I had to pick between you and him, I'm going with him. Like, I want to be.
No, you've got to have my back.
I always say that.
We go into the rumble.
Okay. I mean, if you walk up to somebody and punch somebody in the face, I'm like, here we go. But if it's Tony Gwynn Jr., I don't want to jump in there.
I'm just like,
whoosh. Yeah, Paulie just ducks away.
I'm not going to punch him in the face. I use all my barbs are all verbal.
Yeah, yes. We know. You don't say. What happened? Did he?
I don't know. I think even Adam was kind of expecting him there, and he just. I mean, he's been traveling a ton. I totally understand. The grind.
Yeah, but they were in Anaheim.
But they were in Kansas City before that.
He's got a family.
He's got kids.
I just like him there.
I do, too.
I like him with us on the roundtable because, he's the only one that I really put any stock in on this radio station. He's it. I'm sorry. I don't even believe myself half the time, and I certainly don't believe you.
Yeah, but I was listening to their show yesterday, and he was nodding along with Matt Kemp's comments about the soft media in San Diego.
I think that's the player fraternity. I really do. I mean, those guys, they're a fraternity, and as much as we all want to think that they're not, they are. And I think he probably knows Matt Kemp too. Probably knows him very well, actually. And for him. What did he say exactly?
Matt
was right back then.
He said that, and he's not wrong. I mean, certainly the media in Philadelphia and New York is more hostile.
Sure.
They're going to ask more pointed, maybe, questions.
Sure.
Combative questions.
Combative, yeah.
And you get less of that here. And they actually pointed out the late T.J. Simers, who just passed away, was the one guy in Southern California. Started at the UT, went up to the L.A. Times, was their columnist. And I was at a few press conferences where he was at, and it can get very uncomfortable the way he asked questions. That's what you get other places.
Sure.
We don't try to make I would like to think we ask tough questions, but I do it in a way. I'm not trying to make the person I'm talking to feel uncomfortable about it. I just want to get to the bottom of things. I just like a good, honest answer. But I'm not looking to pick a fight with the person I'm talking to. And in other markets, it's almost as if the reporters are sometimes looking to pick a fight almost in asking their questions. I don't believe in that. It's a different style. But, he agreed with that. Now, they didn't really address Matt Kemp's other part of it, which was he would have played better had the media been
tougher
holding
him
more accountable.
Yeah, and honestly, that's the part I didn't like at all. That was my whole basis. It wasn't, I didn't take offense. I mean, like I said, I was playing music at that time, but the thing of nobody asked me why I was terrible, and so I had to go somewhere else where they did. That doesn't make any sense to me as a grown man making $20 million a year. Isn't that motivation enough? Isn't being in the locker room,
having to look in the eyes of your teammates and knowing you're letting them down,
bro,
not enough? You need someone in the media to point it out for you?
We beat the crap out of ourselves at fantasy camp when we boot one, or if I give up 9 runs, which is like every fantasy camp. I'm inconsolable, and so that's the part for me that really bugged me, of you don't need any, if you need any extra motivation, then that's not the mentality that you want to have as a professional athlete, in my opinion. I've never been a professional athlete, but I've been a professional radio host, and that's always been my mentality. I don't need Adam to kick me in the ass to get me in gear, It just doesn't make any sense to me. So
I do think that you have to understand, though, that there are a lot of professions, including this one, where you can simply work harder and have more success. You just put in more time, more preparation, you outwork the other guy, and that's going to pretty much carry the day. But baseball is not,
it's not
always one of those.
And I understand.
You cannot work your way out of a slump. You cannot just work harder to get out of a losing streak. It doesn't work that way in baseball all the time.
No, I mean, if you're
not that they don't work hard, they do.
If you're not pitching well, maybe the last thing you want to do is go out and throw. I'm going to go out and throw 300 pitches today until I get it right. No, you can't do that. I'm not hitting
well. You can overswing in the batting
cage.
That's
the thing. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to take 300 swings today. It works for some guys. It doesn't work for others. Vijay Singh used to hit 5,000 golf balls a day. Or 1,000 or something. Some ridiculous number.
Oh, yeah. He was an insane range rat.
Not everybody can do that, right? Their body won't physically allow them.
And then there was Bruce Litsky, who never practiced at all.
That's crazy, man. Crazy.
I mean, it's definitely in sports. You have to be dedicated to your craft for the most part and be a hard worker. But when things aren't going well, working harder is not always the solution.
It's working smarter, working smarter, knowing it's trial and error. It's a lot of trial and error for these guys. They talk about it. I know what my body needs. I know what it doesn't need. Mookie Betts is going through this right now in L.A. He's in a 1-for-25, I believe, and that's very rare for a guy of Mookie Betts' caliber and ability, right?
So I'm guessing Bill Plaschke has him in a headlock after the game.
Come on, figure it out. Be better. They're saying essentially that, well, the common man, we are the sports are, well, it's because he's working so hard at moving the shortstop. And Mookie goes, Mookie came and goes, that's not it. He goes, I feel like I'm 21, 22 years old again. My body feels great. My mind feels great. I'm just not hitting. And I think it's frustrating for us, and I'm sure not for us. I hope he can. I hope he goes 1-for-160. But for the LA media, is well, clearly it's because you're moved to short, and he's like, that's not it. That is not it at all. We like to spin narratives. We like to guess, have hypotheses about what's going on. Sometimes you're just not hitting. You're not seeing it well. Not seeing it out of his hand. Bat path is messed up. Whatever it is. And that's the hard part about this game, you know? I really think so.
And then you specifically get into situations like hitting with runners in scoring position. All right. As a fan, obviously it's because you can't handle pressure. You've got something in your mind. You can't handle pressure. There's no way you got to the big leagues without the ability to handle a little bit of pressure.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, one day, 5 years, 10 years into your career, if you're Manny Machado, you just forgot how to handle pressure. It doesn't really make sense when you think about it. That can't be the explanation. Why aren't you hitting with runners in scoring position this last week?
Right.
Don't know. It's one of those things. It's not necessarily a lack of effort. It's not necessarily not working hard enough.
Yeah.
But something, who knows the answer? Maybe Mike Schilt does. He's going to join us coming up at 9 o'clock with the manager's report. Before then, we'll get a little early Rindle report headlines with Paulie.
So
coming up
reports.
Next. A
lot of reports.
Reports. Everything's a report. Reporting for duty, Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Never did get into those home run numbers, but I was looking. I was actually surprised they haven't been out-homered by more. Padres have been out-homered 72-60 by their opponents,
God.
Which offsets the fact that they have they've out-hit their opponents by about 20 points average-wise. They've struck out more than 100 times less than their opponents.
Yeah.
They've walked more than their opponents. I mean, you know, that's... Generally, as Mike Schilt will tell you and has told us, those are formulas for winning baseball. When you are getting on base and you're hitting for a better average than the teams you are playing directly against on that day, that usually turns into a win. But somehow, like the last 5 days when the Padres have gotten great pitching performances and have out-hit their opponents, they're still turning them into losses. Five straight, first time in baseball history that a team has turned in five consecutive quality starts while out-hitting their opponent and lost every single game.
You don't want to be on the wrong side of those stats. You don't want to, like the Chicago White Sox just set a franchise record, 14 straight they lost last night. But then again, if you're a White Sox fan, did you have any expectation that it was going to be different this year? I know your general manager told you, no, we'll be able to compete in a weak division. Though the division, for once, in the Central is not weak at all right now. So I think, you know, you expect that if you're a Chicago White Sox fan. You did not expect that from the San Diego Padres. And the one thing that we were worried about with Joe and you going down was, can we weather the storm pitching-wise? And we've more than weathered the storm in the last 5 days. The guys have pitched their asses off. And offense has let them down. Base running's let them down. Defense has let them down.
Now, like with the White Sox, three of those losses are by one run.
Yeah.
A couple more are by two runs. But they also have gotten bodied 14-2.
Yeah, still L's.
12-5. They're still L's, 7-2. None of the Padres' losses have been...
It doesn't matter.
They've all been games they could have won.
But they're all L's.
It makes it much worse.
It does, yeah. It actually makes
it much worse. Again, I think sometimes people read into Ben as...
Being positive when you're not.
Being positive when I'm really illustrating how much more painful it is to lose five games by a total of six runs. Honestly, remember when the Padres lost to the Marlins and they got bodied? It was way easier to flush that one.
Sure.
Than these last five.
Sure.
That was just a cruddy game. But it was an outlier. And that was when Mike Schilt goes, that's an outlier. That game was an outlier. Padres don't get bodied that often. They've had like three games this season where I felt like, yep, just had a bad game. The Dodgers have had more games this year where they have just been
smoked.
Just been smoked and just had a bad game than the Padres have had.
Yeah, but again, like we talked about, you're able to flush those easier with a nice 8-game cushion or whatever it is, and a 10 games over 500, 12 games over 500. Yeah, those are very doable.
So when Mike Schilt says the Padres compete, in a way they do about as well as anybody, because they don't have that many games where they just have no shot. The problem is they lose way more of the games where you feel like they had it, they should have had it, they could have had it, than other teams that are above 500 right now. And that is ridiculously frustrating. Ridiculously so.
Yeah, no question.
All right, we'll talk to the manager at the top of the hour. Rhino Report coming up after a check of traffic. First, though, this hour on 97.3 The Fan is brought to you by the San Diego County Fair. Share your memories from the 50s to the 90s for the Let's Go Retro Photo Contest at the San Diego County Fair. Your winning photo could win Best of Show and a VIP Fair Access Package plus a $500 Visa gift card. Entry deadline June 9th. Learn more at sdfair.com. Back after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
And get things started here with our edition, today's edition of the Rhino Report.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Welcome to the Rhino Report with Paul Rhino.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
Two stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And one story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, biatch?
It's the Rhino Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? I need some help, please.
That was good.
Can I get a
All right. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
The Rhino Report brought to you by Frozen Ropes. Don't miss out on a free session in the batting cages this Sunday, June 9th from 12 to 4. See the facilities, meet the staff, and sign up for their summer league. Visit SanDiegoFrozenRopes.com. You guys were just talking about the Red Sox handing the White Sox their 14th straight loss. That is a franchise record in Chicago there. Boston won 14-2.
They're losing it, man. They are losing. The post-game show with Ozzy, yeah.
Thank you for that lead-in. Yes. Let's start with, first of all, we'll go to the end of the game. This was the broadcast with two outs in the ninth, final out is made, and Steve Stone made a prediction.
Yes.
And the Red Sox take game one in this four-game series, 14-2, as the White Sox now have the longest single-season losing streak in team history.
Yeah, well, you can put that 14 up there because it's going to stay there because Garrett Crochet wins tomorrow. That's the way the series goes, by the way. Red Sox win the first one. White Sox win the second one. Then they'll worry about 3 and 4 when they get there, but that's the guy that's going to end it tomorrow. It'll stay at 14. In the meantime, long turnaround. Get your rest. Nice to be back at the ballpark.
That is
calling a shot.
Trying to speak something into existence with all your heart right there.
Steve Stone's been around the game long enough to know that that's not how it works. But hey,
played golf with Steve Stone once.
I always got the sense when I was little that I didn't like him. Like when I watched him on TV, I go, I don't think I like him. He sounds like a jerk. Was he?
I had a decent time. Randy Jones was in the foursome as well.
That's fun.
He's a good golfer. But yeah, there's something about
Steve
Stone.
Something about him. And now he's working with that other guy, the new guy. Ugh, I don't know.
Feels like going. He used to be the Cubs analyst.
Yes.
Feels like you get demoted to the White Sox.
100%, man. He just turned into a bigger jerk. Good Lord.
Well, then after the game, they go to their studio for the post-game show. And Chuck Garfine, I don't know him, but he had this to say. A little snippet here.
The losing post-game shows are always the most entertaining. We guarantee you this will be more entertaining than the game you just watched. That is coming up next.
Than the game you just watched.
The shaving game you just watched?
Wow. Mm. You got to be shaving me. It's great. Great. Nothing like a 14 gamer. Boy,
they are
get there.
And they're announcing what? They're shopping stars now.
Yep. Yeah.
Luis Robert Jr. Officially on the block.
Taking calls for Luis Robert.
He's expensive.
Yeah.
Pricey.
Pricey and has not played a lot this year.
Running low on time, so before I get to my third story, I do just want to give a shout out to Doris Burke. She made history yesterday on the NBA Finals. She became the first woman analyst for a major men's championship event ever. She's been on, this is her 12th NBA Finals assignment, but she's been on the sidelines. She was on the actual broadcast as the color commentator with Mike Breen, who's just the best. And then J.J. Redick as well. J.J. Redick gave her flowers after the show on with Scott Van Pelt, but definitely wanted to make note of that. And finally, the end of an era is today. Pat Sajak making his final show as host of Wheel of Fortune after 40 years.
God, I bet he's happy.
40 years he's been doing that job, and he is calling it a career. Got some clips here. First, we will start with Vanna White had a very emotional
message for Pat Sajak.
I can't believe that tomorrow is our last show together. I don't know how to put into words what these past 41 years have meant to me, but I'm going to try. 8,000 by like that. When I first started, I was so green. You made me so comfortable and made me so confident, Pat. You made me who I am. You really did. As the years have gone by, we've grown up on television, but we've also shared so much more behind the scenes. And as much fun as we had on camera, those memories, milestones, and life events we shared with our families outside the studio are my favorite. We've watched our children grow up together. We've traveled all over the world. We've eaten hundreds of meals together. We've laughed. We've cried. We've celebrated. Oh, gosh. What an incredible and unforgettable journey we've had.
Sweet angel.
And I've enjoyed every minute of it with you. As this chapter of our lives is coming to an end, I know you'll still be close by. You're like a brother to me, and I consider you a true lifelong friend who I will always adore. I love you, Pat.
Sounds like he's on his deathbed.
How great was that?
Get that speech to Hannah, because I want her to repeat that to me when I'm on my deathbed. I would like the, except take out brother. You've been like a brother to me. Well, that's that very weird. Number one.
As our two kids are here.
As our children are here. I want her to say that exact thing to me as I'm slipping off into the ether.
And then
never to be back.
Pat Sajak also had his farewell message. The final episode is tonight, but he did release this message yesterday. We'll see how it compares to what Woods, if this was something you would say after Hannah gave that sweet, sweet speech to you.
Time has come to say goodbye. I have a few thanks and acknowledgments before I go. And I want to start with all of you watching out there.
This is me on my deathbed.
It's been an incredible privilege to be invited into millions of homes.
Oh, hundreds.
Night after night, like year after
40.
Year.
40.
Morning after
decade
morning.
After decade. And I've always felt that the privilege came with a responsibility to keep this daily half hour a safe place
Four
for
hours.
Family fun.
5 hours on
no
Thursday.
Social issues, no politics, nothing embarrassing, I hope.
Well.
Just a game. But gradually it became more than that. A place where kids learned their letters, where people from other countries honed their English skills, where families came together along yes. with friends and neighbors and entire generations. What an honor to have played even a small part in all that.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for allowing me into your lives.
Us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could, that still works very much.
Do you think anyone learns anything from our show?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, good.
I mean, I learn a lot from the tier ones. I've learned a lot. Oh, but I do think they learn things.
Good.
Yeah.
I never thought about Wheel of Fortune being a vehicle to help kids learn their letters.
Me neither, actually.
Immigrants learn English, yeah. but it makes perfect sense.
It does.
It does.
That's a good show.
By the way, Vanna, amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, they showed some pictures of her from 40 years ago. And
she was amazing then.
Today.
Amazing today. Yeah.
Not that different.
No.
She's done a nice job all those years.
She's very creepy right now. Very, very creepy. Very.
Oh, my God. I did get the sense in the last few years that Pat was starting to maybe grow weary of some of the contestants and some of their silly answers and stuff. I saw some eye rolls.
It's a long time to do it. We're 6 years together, and my eyes are rolling the back of my head on a daily basis. People are defending Bunting, so I don't know what to do about it. I'll ask the skipper about it next.
It's going to be an interesting conversation coming up.
I'm looking forward to it. I always like talking to Sheldon.
This week, you went on a very passionate rant where you said, this is on the players,
100%.
Not on the skipper.
I will always believe in you know, the skipper needs to push some right buttons, certainly, and he'll make some decisions. He's got to be able to live with those decisions. But it's all about execution for me, and it really always has been. I find myself liking certain managers. I find myself being rubbed the wrong way by certain managers. These last four that we've had here, I don't put any of the blame on them. None. Zero. Zero. I've questioned decisions, but I don't blame them. I blame the players, man, and I always will. It's those are the guys that actually go out between the lines, got to square the baseball up, got to deliver, got to, you know, turn the double play, catch the fly ball, hit the cutoff man. It's them.
Now, some managers
does the manager get blamed for other responsibilities? People's actions. If you're a sales guy and you forgot to file a report, that's not your manager's fault. That's your fault.
They're just such easy targets. It's a thankless job. I completely will always believe that. Unless you win a World Series.
Now we will chat with the skipper, Mike Shildt, his team on a 5-game losing streak. Final hour of Ben and Woods coming up next year on 97.3 The Fan. Don't go away. Never did get into those home run numbers, but I was looking. I was actually surprised they haven't been out-homered by more. Padres have been out-homered 72-60 by their opponents,
God.
Which offsets the fact that they have they've out-hit their opponents by about 20 points average-wise. They've struck out more than 100 times less than their opponents.
Yeah.
They've walked more than their opponents. I mean, you know, that's generally, as Mike Shildt will tell you and has told us, those are formulas for winning baseball. When you are getting on base and you're hitting for a better average than the teams you are playing directly against on that day, that usually turns into a win. But somehow, like the last 5 days, when the Padres have gotten great pitching performances and have out-hit their opponents, they're still turning them into losses. 5 straight. First time in baseball history that a team has turned in 5 consecutive quality starts while out-hitting their opponent and lost every single game.
You don't want to be on the wrong side of those stats. You don't want to, like, the Chicago White Sox just set a franchise record, 14 straight. They lost last night. But then again, if you're a White Sox fan, did you have any expectation that it was going to be different this year? I know your general manager told you, no, we'll be able to compete in a weak division. Though the division, for once, in the Central is not weak at all. Right now. So I think, you know, you expect that if you're a Chicago White Sox fan. You did not expect that from the San Diego Padres. And the one thing that we were worried about with Joe and you going down was, can we weather the storm pitching wise? And we've more than weathered the storm in the last 5 days. The guys have pitched their asses off. And offense has let them down. Base running's let them down. Defense has let them down.
Now, like with the White Sox, 3 of those losses are by 1 run.
Yeah.
A couple more are by 2 runs, but they also have gotten bodied 14-2.
Yeah, still L's.
12-5. They're still L's, 7-2. None of the Padres' losses have been.
It doesn't matter.
They've all been games
all
they
L's,
could have won.
But well, they're all
it
L's.
Makes it much worse.
It does, yeah. It makes it
much worse. Again, I think sometimes people read into Ben as
being positive when you're not.
Positive when I'm really illustrating how much more painful it is to lose 5 games by a total of 6 runs. Honestly, remember when the Padres lost to the Marlins and they got bodied? It was way easier to flush that one.
Sure.
Than these last five.
Sure.
That was just a cruddy game. But it was an outlier. And that was when Mike Shildt goes, that's an outlier. That game was an outlier. Padres don't get bodied that often. They've had like 3 games this season where I felt like, yep, just had a bad game. The Dodgers have had more games this year where they have just been
smoked.
Just been smoked and just had a bad game than the Padres have
had.
Yeah,
but again, like we talked about, you're able to flush those
right
easier with a nice 8-game cushion or whatever it is, and a 10 games over 500, 12 games over 500. Yeah, those are very doable.
So when Mike Shildt says the Padres compete, in a way they do about as well as anybody, because they don't have that many games where they just have no shot. The problem is they lose way more of the games where you feel like they had it, they should have had it, they could have had it, than other teams that are above 500 right now. And that is ridiculously frustrating. Ridiculously so.
Yeah, no question.
All right, we'll talk to the manager at the top of the hour. Rhino Report coming up after a check of traffic. First, though, this hour on 97.3 The Fan is brought to you by the San Diego County Fair. Share your memories from the 50s to the 90s for the Let's Go Retro Photo Contest at the San Diego County Fair. Your winning photo could win Best of Show and a VIP Fair Access Package plus a $500 Visa gift card. Entry deadline June 9th. Learn more at sdfair.com. Back after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
And get things started here with our today's edition of the Rindle Report.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Welcome to the Rindle Report with Paul Rindle.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
two stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And one story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, biatch?
It's the Rindle Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? I need some help, please.
That was good.
Can I get a
All right. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
The Rindle Report brought to you by Frozen Ropes. Don't miss out on a free session in the batting cages this Sunday, June 9th from 12 to 4. See the facilities, meet the staff, and sign up for their summer league. Visit SanDiegoFrozenRopes.com. You guys were just talking about the Red Sox handing the White Sox their 14th straight loss. That is a franchise record in Chicago there. Boston won 14-2.
They're losing it, man. They are losing it. The post-game show with Ozzie, yeah.
Thank you for that lead-in. Yes. Let's start with, first of all, we'll go to the end of the game. This was the broadcast with two outs in the ninth, final out is made, and Steve Stone made a prediction.
Yes.
And the Red Sox take game one in this four-game series, 14-2, as the White Sox now have the longest single-season losing streak in team history.
Yeah, well, you can put that 14 up there because it's going to stay there because Garrett Crochet wins tomorrow. That's the way this series goes, by the way. Red Sox win the first one. White Sox win the second one. Then they'll worry about 3 and 4 when they get there. But that's the guy that's going to end it tomorrow. It'll stay at 14. In the meantime, long turnaround. Get your rest. Nice to be back at the ballpark.
That is
calling a shot.
Trying to speak something into existence with all your heart right there.
Steve Stone's been around the game long enough to know that that's not how it works. But hey,
play listen. Golf with Steve Stone once.
I always got the sense when I was little that I didn't like him. Like when I watched him on TV, I go, I don't think I like him. He sounds like a jerk. Was he?
I had a decent time. Randy Jones was in the foursome as well.
That's fun.
He's a good golfer. But yeah, there's something about Steve Stone.
And now he's working with that other guy, the new guy. Ugh, I don't know.
Feels like going. He used to be the Cubs analyst.
Yes.
Feels like you get demoted to the White Sox.
100%, man. He just turned into a bigger jerk. Good Lord.
Well, then after the game, they go to their studio for the post-game show. And Chuck Garfine, I don't know him, but he had this to say. A little snippet here.
The losing post-game shows are always the most entertaining. We guarantee you this will be more entertaining than the game you just watched. That is coming up next.
Than the game you just watched.
The shaving game you just watched?
Wow. Mm. You got to be shaving me. It's great. It's great. Nothing like a 14-gamer. Boy,
they don't get there. And they're announcing what? They're shopping stars now.
Yep. Yeah.
Luis Robert Jr. Officially on the block.
Taking calls for Luis Robert.
He's expensive.
Yeah.
Pricey.
Pricey. And has not played a lot this year.
Running low on time, so before I get to my third story, I do just want to give a shout-out to Doris Burke. She made history yesterday on the NBA Finals. She became the first woman analyst for a major men's championship event ever. She's been on, this is her 12th NBA Finals assignment, but she's been on the sidelines. She was on the actual broadcast as the color commentator with Mike Breen, who's just the best. And then J.J. Redick as well. J.J. Redick gave her flowers after the show on with Scott Van Pelt, but definitely wanted to make note of that. And finally, the end of an era is today. Pat Sajak making his final show as host of Wheel of Fortune after 40 years.
God, I bet he's happy.
40 years he's been doing that job, and he is calling it a career. Got some clips here. First, we will start with Vanna White had a very emotional message for Pat Sajak.
I can't believe that tomorrow is our last show together. I don't know how to put into words what these past 41 years have meant to me, but I'm going to try. 8,000 by... like that. When I first started, I was so green. You made me so comfortable and made me so confident, Pat. You made me who I am. You really did. As the years have gone by, we've grown up on television, but we've also shared so much more behind the scenes. And as much fun as we had on camera, those memories, milestones, and life events we shared with our families outside the studio are my favorite. We've watched our children grow up together. We've traveled all over the world. We've eaten hundreds of meals together. We've laughed. We've cried. We've celebrated. Oh, gosh. What an incredible and unforgettable journey we've had.
Sweet angel.
And I've enjoyed every minute of it with you. As this chapter of our lives is coming to an end, I know you'll still be close by. You're like a brother to me, and I consider you a true lifelong friend who I will always adore. I love you, Pat.
Sounds like he's on his deathbed.
How great was that?
Get that speech to Hannah, because I want her to repeat that to me when I'm on my deathbed. I would like the, except take out brother. You've been like a brother to me. Well, that's that very weird. Number one.
As our two kids are here.
As our children are here. I want her to say that exact thing to me as I'm slipping off into the ether.
And then
never to be back.
Pat Sajak also had his farewell message. The final episode is tonight, but he did release this message yesterday. We'll see how it compares to what Woods, if this was something you would say after Hannah gave that sweet, sweet speech to you.
Time has come to say goodbye. I have a few thanks and acknowledgments before I go. And I want to start with all of you watching out there.
This is me on my deathbed.
It's been an incredible privilege to be invited into millions of homes.
Oh, hundreds.
Night after night, like year after
40.
Year.
40.
Morning after
decade
morning.
After decade. And I've always felt that the privilege came with a responsibility to keep this daily half hour a safe place
Four
for
hours.
Family fun.
5 hours on
no
Thursday.
No social issues, no politics, nothing embarrassing, I hope.
Well.
Just a game. But gradually it became more than that. A place where kids learn their letters, where people from other countries hone their English skills, where families came together along
yes.
with friends and neighbors and entire generations. What an honor to have played even a small part in all that.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for allowing me into your lives.
Us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could, it still works very much.
Do you think anyone learns anything from our show?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, good.
I mean, I learn a lot from the tier ones. I've learned a lot. Oh, but I do think they learn things.
Good.
Yeah.
I never thought about Wheel of Fortune being a vehicle to help kids learn their letters.
Me neither, actually.
Immigrants learn English,
yeah.
But it makes perfect sense.
It does.
It does.
That's a good show.
By the way, Vanna, amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, they showed some pictures of her from 40 years ago, and
she was amazing then.
Today.
Amazing today. Yeah.
Not that different.
No.
She's done a nice job all those years.
She's very creepy right now. Very, very creepy. Very.
Oh, my God. I did get the sense in the last few years that Pat was starting to maybe grow weary of some of the contestants and some of their silly answers and stuff. I saw some eye rolls.
It's a long time to do it. We're 6 years together, and my eyes are rolling the back of my head on a daily basis. People are defending bunting, so I don't know what to do about it. I'll ask the skipper about it next.
It's going to be an interesting conversation coming up.
I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I always like talking to Shelby.
This week, you went on a very passionate rant where you said, this is on the players,
100%.
Not on the skipper.
I will always believe in you know, the skipper needs to push some right buttons, certainly, and he'll make some decisions. He's got to be able to live with those decisions. But it's all about execution for me, and it really always has been. I find myself liking certain managers. I find myself being rubbed the wrong way by certain managers. These last four that we've had here, I don't put any of the blame on them. None. Zero. Zero. I've questioned decisions, but I don't blame them. I blame the players, man, and I always will. Those are the guys that actually go out between the lines, got to square the baseball up, got to deliver, got to, you know, turn the double play, catch the fly ball, hit the cutoff man. It's them.
Now, some managers
does the manager get blamed for other responsibilities?
People's
if you're a sales guy and you forgot to file a report, that's not your manager's
fault.
That's your fault.
They're just such easy targets. It's a thankless job. I completely will always believe that. Unless you win a World Series.
Now we will chat with the skipper, Mike Shildt, his team on a 5-game losing streak. Final hour of Ben and Woods coming up next year on 97.3 The Fan. Don't go away.